Welcome. Thank you so much for joining me on this live chat seminar. My name is Sue Larkey. For those of you who don't know me, I am a teacher and have written over 12 books on ASD. I believe, armed with the tools of understanding, much can be achieved. My aim in the next 45 minutes is to give you lots of insights and understanding of ASD through my conversation with Dr. Michelle Garnett. Dr. Michelle Garnett. I want you to get the most out of this call. So please, print out the handout document to take notes. If you haven't already, you can do this on my website at www.suelarkey.com. And just so you know, that's S-U-E-L-A-R-K-E-Y. After the call, I will be online at Facebook to take your questions and for people to discuss key points together. This is a lovely way for the community to discuss ideas, and I often find other people have lovely ideas and concepts and can guide each other as well. All you need to do is like me on Facebook, and then you can engage in the conversation. If you haven't already, just search Sue Larkey, and again, remember that's K-E-Y, and you'll see one that says teacher. If you like this, then you'll be able to join the conversation. Some of you I know haven't been getting my updates from Facebook. I believe you just need to change your personal settings to ensure that includes updates from me. Now, on with our fantastic live chat for tonight. We are so lucky. We have Dr. Michelle Garnett, who is joining us to share some insights and information into ASD. Michelle is a clinical psychologist. She's the founder and director of Minds and Hearts, a specialist clinic for Asperger's syndrome and autism, and it's based in Brisbane, Australia. So welcome, Michelle. I really appreciate you joining me.
Hello, Sue. It's lovely to talk to you about this topic so close to my heart.
Oh, and can you share with us, Michelle, why did you start Minds and Hearts?
Well, Sue, I felt I had to. There was just so much need in our community. Minds and Hearts is based in Brisbane, and up until the time I had started, I was managing a wait list of over a year. My colleague and friend, Professor Tony Atwood, who you know and I present with a lot, was struggling with a three-year waiting list, and people were saying to us, can't you just clone yourselves? So Tony and I thought, let's set up a clinic where we can train the people who come along and work with us. We can have a team of people who have the attitude that we need, the knowledge that's needed, and we can start to really address the problems. It was mainly because Asperger's syndrome was so newly described around the world, and many people practicing, whether they were, you know, in any profession, psychiatrists, GPs, psychologists, really didn't have a lot of in-depth knowledge about this particular part of the autism spectrum. And that's what we really needed to address in the community. So that's why we started it.
Oh, fantastic. That's a great description, Michelle. And I know it's filled a massive need. So how long's the waiting list now, Michelle, for people listening?
Well, at Minds and Hearts, I'm happy to say, if you need to have a stream of appointments and ongoing work, we can actually see people immediately now. And I'm really proud to say that because it's taken a long time to get to that point. We have a team now of 11 dedicated psychologists, all of whom we've personally chosen, selected and trained, and we provide ongoing clinical training and supervision. So I really feel happy and confident about how we've been able to address the needs that we see in the community. Diagnostic assessment, we still have a longer wait for diagnostic assessment. People who are ringing now are seeing someone in about April, so it's not too bad, much better than where we were before.
Oh, and I know there'll be people listening throughout Australia suddenly wanting to jump on a plane, because I know many families who the wait list can be a year or more. And as you and I know, particularly for young children, early intervention is so important, but also with the Helping Children with Autism package, families need a diagnosis by the age of six to get the financial support from the government. And it breaks my heart when I meet families who are on wait lists and who missed that early intervention when they suspected something. Yeah.
Absolutely. It's so difficult to wait and to be told that you have to wait, knowing that there's so much you can be doing if you just know what you're dealing with.
Absolutely. Now, I had a little look on your website, which is looking wonderful, Michelle, and I'm just wondering, I noticed on there it says ASC and ASD. Can you tell me what's the difference between ASC and ASD?
Well, it's interesting. We're starting to use ASC more than ASD at the moment. ASD is autism spectrum disorder, and that's the term that has been used more and more frequently in the past decade to understand the broad spectrum of different presentations that you see under the autism umbrella. But what we've found is that there are so many gifts and strengths and abilities that come with autism or Asperger's syndrome that we feel very uncomfortable with the D part, the disorder. As one boy said to me, he had Asperger's syndrome, and he said, but there's nothing disordered about me. And I agree with him. He's actually one of the most ordered boys I've ever met. Disorder has a stigma, and it implies that there's something wrong with the person, a model of defectiveness. And I don't agree with that. And fortunately, there are many people around the world coming to see the light that, yes, there are challenges that come with autism and Asperger's syndrome and related conditions, but there are many strengths too. And we prefer the term condition, so it's at autism spectrum conditions rather than disorders, because we feel it's a more neutral term that better relates about what autism and what Asperger is all about. It's not so, I guess, pejorative.
I love it, Michelle. In fact, I'm going to take that on. I'm going to change all my slides on my workshops now to ASC, and maybe everyone listening can be little autism and Asperger's angels and start using the term and educating
start
everyone out
ASC.
There.
Mm.
Yeah, I love it.
No, thank you. I do too. The movement started with researchers in the UK, and it's moving across. Certainly, it'll take some time, I think, for people to change over. And I know there's a lot of discomfort with change and that new labels can bring confusion. So I'm very mindful of that. But autism spectrum is what we're talking about, and that's very clear. Yes, as I know you're joined on this mission as well, Sue. We just want to take the negativity out of that label.
Absolutely. And I think for families too, often when you have to describe your child using the term condition rather than disorder, that in itself tells people a very different concept. So I think that's fantastic. Now, talking about diagnosis and criteria and letters and all these things we hear, I interviewed Tony a few weeks ago, and he was talking about the DSM-5, which is replacing the DSM-4. And I've had a number of questions. What is the DSM-5? What does it mean? Mm-hmm. Can you just briefly share with us what the DSM is and the changes from 4 to 5 for people listening?
Absolutely. Sure, Sue. So the DSM-5 is an acronym that describes a text, an international text that is used for defining specific conditions or disorders that people may suffer, may experience in their lives, like depression, anxiety, and learning difficulties, for example. So the DSM-5 is the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, 5th edition. So you can see why people say DSM-5. Just that term can put a lot of people off, as you can hear. It's got mental disorders in the title. It's coming from a tradition of psychiatry and medical conditions where we describe disease, what is wrong with someone. It's very much that deficit model, unfortunately. However, the good thing about DSM-5 is it gives people working in the field, so clinicians, diagnosticians, and researchers, a shared language for understanding what we're seeing as we experience the depth and breadth of people's lives and what they're going through. And we need that shared language so that we can communicate to each other meaningfully that we are talking about the same sorts of experiences for different people. And we need it for research as well. If we don't understand what autism is, if we're all talking about a different condition, or if we don't understand what Asperger's syndrome is, then we're not actually able to make much progress on understanding how to help people, because we're just talking about apples and oranges, and the same things don't work for every different person. So we really need to have shared definitions. And the other reason for the DSM-5 and those definitions is funding. If you have a particular, I don't necessarily agree with this, but it's certainly the case in Australia, quite broadly, and the United States and the UK, that the funding given for particular conditions, disabilities and disorders is defined by our international texts. You have to meet certain criteria for a condition according to DSM-5. There's another text as well, the ICD-10, but the one we use in Australia mainly is DSM-5. Now, I say DSM-5 a bit prematurely. It's not coming in. The new edition, as you describe, is not coming in until 2013. There's a little bit of time yet for the reviewers of the text to really hone and revise the definitions. And so the definition of autism and Asperger's syndrome is actually changing in the DSM-5. Since 1994, we have had the same definition for autism and Asperger's syndrome, called Asperger's disorder, in DSM. But that's changing now. And the main way it's changing is actually that there's a new category they're bringing in, which is ASD, so autism spectrum disorders. DSM is a group who love the term disorder, so they use disorder. And so we've got ASD as the umbrella term, and what that incorporates is autism, Asperger's syndrome, and childhood disintegrative disorder, and PDD and OS. So some listeners will be aware of this title. PDD and OS is pervasive developmental disorder not otherwise specified. Quite a mouthful, but it has been used in the past as under DSM-4. And it will be used until DSM-5 comes in. And then all those labels will no longer be used. The term ASD will be used instead, and there will be a designation under that as to whether the person is mild in their form of ASD, moderate or severe. So this is a very big change that's coming.
These are huge changes. And just referencing back to what you were saying before about how one of the things with the DSM-5 or DSM-4 in Australia is that influences funding. So I can imagine there's going to be a huge flow and effect to funding if we're changing the criteria. So I think this is something we're all just sort of going to have to watch this space, but at least everyone's got an idea of the changes. And am I right, Michelle, that sensory is now going to be included under the DSM-5?
Absolutely. This is one of the changes we are so happy about, we are embracing, because in all previous definitions of Asperger's syndrome and autism, there hasn't been a very clear or very strongly defined mention of sensory issues, and yet for anyone who lives with or loves or has Asperger's syndrome or autism themselves, we know this is a huge part of the experience of an autism spectrum condition, that sensory issues can predominate in life in terms of how they affect the person's well-being and mood. So to have this recognised, it's in one of the criteria. So the new criteria, it's actually condensed from, there used to be three categories of criteria that needed to be met. There are now only two, and within one of those, it's a broad category that's essentially describing the repetitive sort of behaviours and fixated interests that come along with Asperger's syndrome and autism, and within that criteria, we're looking at sensory issues for the first time. So that's a wonderful change. I think some of the changes coming along in DSM-5 we really need to embrace, because DSM-5 is overdue. You know, we have been using an outdated definition. We've been using the same definition for nearly 19 years. And in that time, we have just had an enormous amount of research, of growth, of knowledge in this area. And DSM-5 certainly will reflect that. But I do think that one of the concerns, particularly in the Asperger community, is the loss of a sense of identity. But if you take that name away, this has been a signpost for people. This has been a pathway, a sense of identity that's the missing piece of the jigsaw puzzle. Now I understand what I have been dealing with all my life. And to suddenly to have some people in America who sit around desks and in the UK, and then they suddenly say, oh, no, we're not going to call it that anymore. We're going to call it ASD. That can be quite a significant step for particularly adults with the condition, we've found. This is the feedback we're getting at the moment. People who want to comment, there's invitations coming through to comment on DSM-5, and I do encourage listeners, if they feel strongly about it, to make comment, because there is a huge panel reviewing and there have been thousands of submissions already, and it's clear through the reviews that DSM is listening and they are changing. So if anyone wants to comment, I would recommend it, and just to go to the internet, to use your search engine, Google, whatever, to put in DSM-5 and it will come up, and there is space to comment there. The invitation will come May this year. So that will be the time they'll invite people to say something about what's happening.
Oh, good. I might try and amend the handout and maybe put that information for people on the handout, Michelle, and then they can just know where they go, because I think the more people that look at it and comment, because if we think about it, you said we've had the old one from 1994 to 2013, we're probably going to have the new one for a significant amount of time. Okay. So we want to make sure we get the changes
right in
now. Yeah. Just back on your comment on the Asperger's thing, I think even as a teacher, if I know I have a child with autism in my class, it tells me certain adaptations I need to make. If I have a child with Asperger's, it often tells me that I need to focus more on the social, be more aware of the playground and the social areas that I need to work on for that student. So I also think as a teacher, those differentiations do make a huge impact on my adaptations and sense of